listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
On LA Talk Radio, as always, powered by Breakdown Services. We have a very exciting show today. And Michael, tell them who we have and who we may have.
It's a little dodgy right now. We are expecting the fabulous and beautiful Rita Moreno to be with us today from her home up north. And she's had a conflict that has come up, so we're possibly delayed with her joining us via telephone, but we'll see about that. And if she doesn't reach us today, then we'll reschedule and have her on a show in the near future.
And for all we know, she may chime in right in the middle of the hour somewhere. So, but in addition to Rita, we also have the equally lovely and talented Dan Frischman is with us today. Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You know what? I'm so excited that Dan is here. I think we should really give it up for you, don't you think?
The right kind of guy.
There we go. He's here. Okay, we really could have worked on the cutoff of the applause, just like a guillotine cut.
Yeah. But, well, you know, it's those people in the lobby. They're
hundreds of thousands of them. Yeah. Well, they follow Dan everywhere.
And I know that. I know that, which is amazing.
It's a problem.
Well, look at that face. I'd follow that face, right?
Dan, we're so, so lucky to have you and glad to have you and looking forward to all that you have to share with us today.
Thank you.
It's going to be a blast. Dan has some tales to tell. We just touched on it briefly, but I'm looking forward to it.
I cannot wait.
I don't want to give anything away. Michael, why don't you begin by mentioning our sponsors?
Indeed. Indeed. We'd like to, as always, thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. And Breakdown Services is, of course, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. So to learn more about Breakdown Services, please visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks also go out to performingartslive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California. Performingartslive.com. And we Indeed. Send a shout out to Mike there, who is a great supporter of
Mike Napoli, a good Italian
arts.
Boy.
Mike Napoli. That's right. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Mike Naples.
That would...
Yeah, I mean, that's the literal translation.
Is that
Napoli is Naples.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course.
Don't mean to lose you in the jargon.
No, well, listen,
did I throw you?
I've been to other places in the world, Paul. Hey, Paul, how was your week?
My week was magical. Yeah. It was just great. It was, you know, I called my mother this morning because I knew that we were having, my sister was in visiting, and my sister met Dan when my sister was here, so she
really?
Was all excited about meeting Dan because she remembers him from television. Right. And so I called my mom and I said, we have Dan Frischman, who Carrie met. She goes, oh yes, and I've seen him on TV. And then I mentioned Rita Moreno to my mother, and then she got a phone call. And you know, for years we were trying to get my mother to get call waiting because, you know, you call and, you know, it's always busy. And we finally got her to take call waiting. And now we're campaigning to go back to the busy signal, I think, because she is just
Why would
completely.
That be?
Because every time someone calls, if she has an incoming phone call, it is absolute chaos
on
the phone.
So,
okay,
well,
I'll give you an example.
I'm going to be the caller.
Right, you be
I'm
me.
Okay.
You be
you.
Me.
All right.
And I will be my mother.
All right.
And we will have a phone conversation, and we will a call will come in during that phone conversation.
All right.
Okay. You're me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Ma, it's Paul out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you, hon. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so tell me how.
Oh, God damn it. I have a call. Would you hang on? Your brother got me this goddamn caller ID. I got to see who it is. Hang on. Are you still there? Are you still there?
I can't hear you with this damn beeping in.
Hang up. It's your sister calling.
You want me to hang up?
It's your sister. I don't know if I should take... No, it's gone to voicemail like 20 minutes ago, right? It's gonna. I don't know. You think I should take the call?
I think you should take the call.
I don't know. I can always call her back.
Should I call her back?
You know, because her kids could be on fire. You know, 20 minutes of deciding whether or not she's going to take the call. Then she hangs up on me because she hasn't mastered the flash click.
Right.
And then she calls my sister because she's convinced it's important. And then I call her back and the entire process starts all over again, except now I'm the disruptive one.
Well, she could have written it down to remind herself.
She could have written it down. But you know my mother can't write it down because my mother has one pen. In
what
her
do you
whole
mean,
house.
One pen?
My mother
that?
Has one pen, Dan. I'm not kidding you. One ballpoint pen in the entire house. I don't know if it's that she was raised by, you know, people who went through the Depression or she just felt one
raised
pen.
By a pack of pens.
One pen that she uses until it runs out. And then she buys another pen. So, and it's also like, you know, 40 feet away from any phone in the whole place. So that's the other
thing. Of course,
thing. Yeah. Anyone leaves a come on, take down this number. Hang on. 20 minutes of that, she comes back and just do. So, I mean, I love her dearly. And
I love her dearly.
They are idiosyncrasies. They are not.
Dan, have you met his mother?
They are not.
I have not.
You have. Well, you haven't met her, but you've seen her portrayed because you saw the show.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
So you saw the very flattering portrayal.
Well, you know.
I know of your mother.
And Dan, I understand that you had a conversation with your mother.
I have many conversations with my mother.
Yeah, there was one in particular that I think was a standout remark.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
sorry.
Your uncle.
I recall,
is that
yes.
Right?
I was talking to her on the phone, and she said, I have to go. Uncle Al just got out of the shower, and he wants me to cut his toenails while they're still warm.
Oh, now that's a picture I'm not sure I want to have.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, she's a sweet woman.
There's so many things I love about that. Wow. Is first of all the mental image that it calls to mind, of course.
Immediately.
But the other thing too is that she's thought out the entire process.
Yes, right. This is a routine.
This has happened before.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know, and my mom. This brings to mind something of my mother, my dear mother, who several years ago, we were all. A bunch of friends, 10 of us, 12 of us, whatever, going out to have Mexican food here in Sherman Oaks at Casa Vega.
Yes.
Famous Mexican restaurant here.
Famous margaritas.
Yes, famous margaritas. And my mother wanted to come along, and she wanted to meet everybody. So I said, sure, Mom, come on. You know, we'll have a nice evening, and you'll have some good Mexican food. So we get there, and everyone's in good spirits, and a friend of mine starts ordering the round of margaritas. Now, my mom is a drinker of scotch and soda, light.
Mm-hmm. Old school.
Old school. Very proper and just a little sip. Well, after one Cuervo Gold 1800 margarita.
Oh, you talked her into the margarita?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I noticed her face was starting to melt a little bit at the table. So the expressions were changing, and she was very kind of... very happy, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything was funny, even if it wasn't. She said to me, "Order me another drink." And I said, "No, Mom, I don't think so. You know, I don't think you need it. Are you sure?" And she said, "Order me another drink." The waiter came by and says, "Order me another drink." And I said to him, "I think, you know, my mom would like another drink, but I don't think it's really necessary." And she takes this waiter by the tie and pulls him to her face and says, "Don't pay any attention to my son. I want another drink." And he brings her another drink.
Right.
Now, she proceeds to have the second drink. We're still on the first drink, the rest of us. She excuses herself, goes to the restroom, and we don't see her for an hour.
Oh, dear.
And I have to actually send somebody in. One of those women that works there with the big hoop skirts. You know, then they've worked there for 45 years.
Right.
And they go to the bathroom, and she had passed out in the stall, face down on the floor.
Oh, my God.
My mother.
Oh, yeah. there's a fragile flower.
There, right. And to this day, she doesn't remember it.
Oh, wow. Well, why would she? I mean, she
doesn't
hammered.
Care to remember it. Oh, my. But you got to love them, moms,
yeah.
Right?
The only time I remember my mother ever having a little too much, because my mother was a second grade teacher and very just conservative in her way, in her manner. But I had to be like 7, 8 years old, and she and my father came back from some party they were at night, and my mother walks in, and this is what I hear. Wee! I've had too much to drink. I'm tipsy. Wee! And I just, even at 6 or 7, I was embarrassed. I was so embarrassed for her that I've gotten drunk only a couple times. Just if I sound anything like that ever.
I just love the fact that it was fully recognized and described by her. It's almost like an out of body drunk experience.
Right,
it's like
exactly.
Observing herself, just like, I'm a little tipsy. Oh man, that's hysterical. And as we all know, you can't cut toenails when you're flying.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
You really have to watch that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everybody vote this past week, did they?
I did.
Did you? That's none of your business,
well,
Mister.
Voting? I'm not asking who you voted for.
I voted. Good. I just go there for the sticker.
Yes, we all did. I'm just hoping everything turns out the way it's supposed to be now.
Oh, well, it has for California.
Well, we're not.
I mean,
sure
in terms of
that, we're not sure about that.
You're not going to introduce politics into our life.
No, I'm not.
Banter,
I was just
you?
Having a discussion with one of our other radio show hosts on another show. Out there in the lobby, who does talk about politics.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The gentleman who...
Yeah, we were talking about Meg Whitman.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Could use a new haircut, that woman.
We were talking about Meg Whitman. I was talking to the gentleman who's with the Mother Love Show. What is his name? Kennedy?
Yes.
Yes. And I said that Meg Whitman sort of reminds me of that person, and it's not my bit. I wish it was my bit, but the person who comes in last and in the Olympics for the marathon. And you just, there's that person who comes in dead last who's thinking, I'm last. I trained for 4 years.
Yeah.
I didn't have to train at all.
Right.
Because that's really what it is. You know, it's just $141
million.
$179 million. And what that money could have done for the social service programs that she's supposed to be a proponent of.
It could have completely reinvigorated the state of California. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? She should have just sent every one of us a check.
My favorite comment on it was an op-ed cartoon in the LA Times, which showed Meg Whitman at her computer on eBay, and it said, $160 million, you've been outbid.
Oh, that's great. Well, I gotta find that.
You know her last commercial that she was going for right before the November election came was the opening line was, okay, so I am a billionaire, and she's that's the opening line. I am a billionaire, and then she goes into all the things that she's not. But I'm not a, and she does a laundry list of things. And I thought, what an odd way to approach somebody to ask for their vote.
You know,
because they're stating, I have so much money, more money than God.
Right.
But it's all okay, because I'm going to do this for you and that for you.
Right.
And, you know, I have a problem just looking at the hairdo. I do. I really do. Because it's bad hair. You know, it's split ends. It's not.
But
for
see,
a woman that's got that much money,
well, that's just it, though, Michael. Look at, I mean, Donald Trump has more money than God. Look at his hair.
I
mean, it looks like, you know, The hounds should be chasing his head, you know?
Or living in it.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think it's delusion. I think it's all born of ego. You don't really see yourself. You have an image of what you think you are. You have an image of that, and you don't really see it. Like, when I look at myself, I see a tiny little pug-nosed pixie. That's what I see.
I see that. Though.
Do you?
I see that. I do.
Do you?
Yeah. In my sleep. I do. Yeah, I do.
That's a bit unsettling.
My nose isn't usually this big. I'm very excited right now.
Oh, are you? Oh, well.
Okay, it's going to be one of those shows.
So that
is that your is
oh,
that
I have
your
a line for that?
Is that your proboscis? Are you just glad to see me?
There you go. Dan, so many people know you from the wonderful television series that you were on for 5 years, was it?
Yes.
Yes, head of the class.
Right.
Playing Arvid.
Mm-hmm.
Who could forget that character? The Brainiac.
Yes, the nerdy kind of...
The nerdy Brainiac. Tell us a little bit about your history of being an actor and how that happened. What happened before that led up to that opportunity for you?
Well, I started out as a magician at kids' parties when I was 8 years old in New Jersey. I was the Great Houdini. My father came up with that name for me, and it just kind of stuck. And I was doing 4 shows a weekend when most kids were home playing with their friends, and I was practicing magic tricks in the door mirror that my father put up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would practice the tricks, and I'd go downstairs and show my mother, whoever happened to be there, and my mother would say, "No, I saw behind the your hand, I saw the thing. And so I'd go back upstairs and work on it for hours and hours. So and I love doing entertaining the kids. And I realized that I liked getting the laughs more than the oohs and ahs. So that kind of led me, after a short stint at Penn State University, to the Comic Strip Nightclub on the Upper East Side of New York, where I performed at 1 and 2 in the morning for five people who were there because they'd missed their bus. And I didn't necessarily learn how to work for an audience. I learned how to entertain five drunks at 1 and 2 in the morning.
Which is probably something valuable, actually, when you stop and think about it, right?
If you can entertain those guys,
then you know you're home.
But also, too, there's a whole school of thought. If you were doing kids' parties, and I did kids' parties, too, as a magician, and the kids are a tough audience because they're not...
Lots of expectations.
Well, not only that, but they're not... You can't embarrass them. Right. So they can't, you know, they're not going to worry about pointing out a flaw or something. They're not going to be diplomatic as...
That's right. They'll say, I know that trick. My very first show was for Kenny Ward up the street, and like Mark Herkert, one of, you know, a kid who lived across from me, knew all the tricks and just blabbed them as I would perform the trick. There's two narratives. There's one in his hand. He's hiding it.
And oddly enough, he became one of those five drunks that was actually in the nightclubs.
Right.
But you said that I interrupted you when you were talking about doing the stand-up comedy. Did you, before you go back to that, because you realized you like getting the laughs more than the oohs and ahs, did you start to introduce comedy into the, when you were just doing the magic?
Oh, yeah.
It was already like lighthearted and...
Right. I would make sure that the kids were laughing and that would drove me was to get them to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were laughing, they would forget that maybe they know the trick or that they saw something behind. They wouldn't care because they'd just be laughing and having fun.
Okay.
And I learned to get the most, the troublemaker would be the one I would get to come up and help.
Because
then he's involved and I learned those little tricks.
Okay, I have to chime in here. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dan, but I have to chime in with my nightmare. I'll save it to the end when we save our nightmare stories.
I have a
nightmare magic story. Remind me that I have a nightmare magic story to tell at the end. We will share.
Yes, that's going to be your little initiation.
But anyway, so I cut you off. You were at on the Upper East Side performing for five drunks. Take it from there.
Was one of them Paul's mother?
No. Or my mother. Or her mother was probably there. Forgive me, Mrs. Strowman.
Parents never actually came to watch me because it was, I'm on at 1 or 2 in the morning. I would get back, and I lived with them still, so I'd get home at 9 a.m. when my mother was going out to teach second grade. My father was getting up to be a CPA. And I'd go, hello, and I'd go, and I would just go to sleep for the, you know.
Oh, because you lived in Jersey. That's right.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
So I
would just,
and
I
not
would
just Jersey, but Whippany. Right.
So Whippany, New Jersey.
Whippany, yeah.
When I later did an episode of Seinfeld, it just so happened that in the script it mentioned that I bought some shoes in Persephone, New Jersey, and I asked Seinfeld, who I knew from my stand-up days, is it okay if I say Whippany instead of Persephone? Because Persephone is the neighboring town, and they're kind of our rivals and such. So can I say and he thought about it. He said, Whippany doesn't sound like a town. And that was the end of that. I thought, okay, whatever, you know.
Of course, whatever
my thought was, and Persephone does.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, but going back to the 2 in the morning, I would come up with a different act every single time because I really didn't know what I was doing yet.
Oh, a different stand-up act?
Yeah, I would have a different act every night I'd come in.
That you would write,
I would write it at home and come in and do a completely new act. Sometimes I did some magic things. But and then one time I'd come in with a bug outfit, and I have antenna and all, and I would do this character of the B News, you know, in tonight's headline: Man mows lawn, thousands homeless, you know, that sort of thing. So, and I would just try to keep what worked, and then sometimes I would fail, but it was a place to get up and experiment,
right?
Which was
That's the important thing. You exploited that situation. I mean,
right.
I don't know anyone doing stand-up who did something different every night because they would just like hone
right.
one routine.
Yeah, Dennis Miller was one of our late night. One of the late night, we were called the late nighters because we'd go on after the regular show was over.
Oh, okay.
And he only did a crazy prop act. He would literally bring a box of props with him up on the stage, and like he would put a box of Ritz crackers on his head with a rubber band around his chin, and he'd like start dancing around, and then he'd finally go, putting on the Ritz.
Oh.
And that was the act.
Oh.
Wow.
I got to tell you, your B News has it all over putting on the Ritz.
I was going to say, it's almost like Dennis's television.
But he was very nice to me. And sometimes he'd let me stay on his. He lived with his brother in a little studio apartment. And if it was too late to catch a bus, I would go sleep on his cot in his.
Well, that is being kind, isn't
it? Yeah. We did have a good camaraderie. Okay. Which was great.
Let me ask you something, Dan. Who influenced you in comedy? Some of the greats. Okay. I want to ask you. That's part one of this question.
Right. Steve Martin, probably number one.
Really?
For magic, I have some friends from. There was a magician named Fred Kolb when I was in Cub Scouts, and he used to do magic shows. And I would. He was also a teacher at Morristown High School, and I would go watch his shows. The late great Frank Pazel, who was also a teacher, and he was a magician. So these were some early mentors. But stand-up comedy-wise, probably Steve Martin. I watched him one night before anybody knew who he was on the Carson show, and he had props and he had a plant, and he would say the plant was his sidekick. I remember this particular routine, and he said, I couldn't afford a real sidekick, so this is my sidekick. And then whenever we laugh at some joke, he'd say, shh, you missed what he said. We had a talent show, of course, at my high school, and I just got up and I said, how many of you have ever heard of Steve Martin? And nobody had at that time. And I said, well, I'm going to do his act for you. And I just did his whole act, and I got big laughs. And I thought, hey, this is something I can do. Of course, I realized I probably got to come up with my own act eventually.
Right.
But also, then Robin Williams became when he became a big star. I thought, well, I have to meet Robin Williams because he was my idol. And so I wrote a script, a Mork and Mindy script. It was my first script I ever wrote. I wrote it in like a day and a half, and it was called The Incredible Shrinking Mork, where he becomes very, very little. And I read that he was performing at the Copacabana nightclub in New York City. And I thought, I know, I'll take it. And I was just out of college, so I maybe just 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'll bring it to the Copacabana. And because I have a script for Mr. Williams, they'll let me write in.
Right. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. So,
how could they possibly stand in my way?
Right. So my cousin Larry drove our station wagon. We drove a little station up to the front of the Copacabana. And I got out and I told the doorman, I have a script for Mr. Williams, and he said, well, he just kind of laughed and said, I can't really, he was nice enough, though, and he said, I can't really let you in, but why don't you give me the script, and I'll give it to Mr. Williams' managers. I said, great, I'm in. So I gave him the script, and I'm like, and the next day, I'm waiting for the phone to ring. I'm back at my parents' house in New Jersey. My father was a CPA, and the phone's ringing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But every time, I'm thinking, okay, these people are from Hollywood. They have heard of break-in. It was an emergency break-in at the time. You actually would call the operator, and they would break into your conversation.
Oh, that's right. I used to do that.
Oh, yeah. This was the days before a call waiting.
Before a call
waiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. My mother would have loved that.
I loved doing that. Yeah.
So I figured that's going to happen, but it never happened. And then I just forgot about the whole thing but then a couple months later, my brother Bill called from his college and said he heard they're putting together a $1 million Mork and Mindy episode to open the second season in which Mork shrinks. I thought, huh?
Wow.
What a coinkydink.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but we began to think, well, what if it wasn't such a coincidence? And my father knew a lawyer, and the lawyer just said, well, did you have it protected? No, not really. So we didn't do anything about it. What am I going to do, get blackballed in Hollywood before I even step foot there?
Right.
Troublemaking kid.
Right.
But I did watch the show with a friend, and there were a couple similarities. They from the first to the second season, they had switched a lot of the characters.
Okay.
And mine was a half-hour show, and they made it into this whole hour special. But there were a couple things, like there's a knock at the door, and Mr. Bickley from downstairs, Tom Poston, has it. I said, oh, it's going to be Tom Poston with his new dog. The door opens, there's Tom Poston holding his new dog. And they walk in, and they put the dog down, and they all leave. So it's going to be Mork versus mini Mork versus this dog. So there were some similarities, but, you know, did they steal it? I don't know. I have no idea.
That's pretty interesting.
So, no, but that's a pretty specific bit. That's not like something that would just like, oh, you know, when someone shrinks and, you know, they wind up in the bathtub and they're going down the drain or something. We have a phone call, actually.
Oh, we do.
We have a phone call, but I don't know who it is, so I'm going to answer
it
on the fly.
It's probably Robin Williams.
We will find out. I'm answering the phone right now. Here we go. Hello, you've reached LA Talk Radio. Who am I speaking to?
This is Basil and Evelyn Banks.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I am good. I am good. You're on the air for LA Talk Radio. We thought you were Rita Moreno.
Oh, no, not quite.
Oh, okay.
Can you
yeah.
be?
Well, who are you?
Well, I am the host of a radio show along with my friend Michael Sterling here. We are on the air currently, as are you.
How are you, Mrs. Banks?
Oh, okay. I wonder if I could get in touch with someone that I could sort of give a little resume or something about Dan Frischer's program.
Dan Frischer.
Dan Frischer, who is on your talk radio show also.
Yeah, he's here currently.
Yes.
Say hello, Dan.
How are you? How are you, Mrs. Banks? Dan Frischer. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to my website, please. It's danfrischer.com.
Frischer. Frischer.
Well,
No, that I can't help you with.
This is Dan Frischer.
This is actually Dan Frischer. You're probably looking for Dan Frischer.
Yeah, or how do I get in touch with the office of the or the organizer of this of this station?
That would be contacting through latalkradio.com. That would be the wisest way to go. You can email them there. latalkradio.com.
Wait a minute. LA Radio?
No, LA Talk Radio.
Oh, Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Oh, Talk Radio.
LATalkRadio.com, yes.
Dot com.
Yes.
Okay. And is that all in large letters? Or
no,
is that
you
all
could. You, it's
small
it's not case sensitive. It's LATalkRadio.com.
All in one. Is that it?
Okay. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye, Mrs. Banks.
Oh, that's
hysterical.
I think
that was Bob Eubanks.
I got to tell you something. You know what? I think that's Rita Moreno, and she's just screwing with us.
Yes, I was going to say
that. She's just screwing with us. Could you hear her giggling in the background, just disguising her voice?
I heard dance at the gym in the background going on there. Yeah.
By the way, Frischer. Dad Frischer. No, we have a Frischer here. No, your name's not Frischer anymore, Dad. Oh,
that's one of my many fans, by the way.
I love the magic of
at least you've got him, right?
Live internet radio.
At least you've got
him.
Now, all right, so you've identified some of these great people like Robin Williams and some of the greats there. What about the more contemporary comics of today? Do you have any favorites? I'm asking because I happen to have a couple.
Oh, do you? I haven't really been following the comics. I have like favorite TV shows like The Office and Mad
what
Men.
About Kathy Griffin, for example? What do you think of Kathy?
I respect what she does. And
Lisa Lampanelli.
I don't really know.
Oh, no. I like Lisa.
I love Lisa Lampanelli.
She's very bawdy, though.
Very.
Really
that's why I like her.
Yeah. I like Kathy Griffin. It's just that I think Kathy Griffin is just sort of like it's not the same shtick, but it's just like I can take about this much of the gossip and the backbiting and the. You know, the sniping and all that. And then it just sort of starts to get a little strident for me. I think she's incredibly clever. And she's very well respected. There was a documentary recently about Joan Rivers called Piece of Work, which is a great documentary about just, you want to talk about someone who has just cut their teeth in stand-up comedy and created, you know, Joan Rivers. I mean, just like, you know, the genius that she is. But she, just how much it changes over time. And she was just saying, you know, I can't book these big rooms because they give all the big rooms to Kathy Griffin. Huh. And it was just like, even she was sort of like recognizing what a force Kathy Griffin is to be. Did I say Griffin or Griffith?
Because
I
don't. You said Griffin.
Okay, because people make that mistake all the time.
Yeah.
But I thought,
like Frischer and Frischer.
I thought that you had, in terms of contemporary comedians, but I seem to remember having a conversation with you that we also have similar heroes of the old comedy days, the classic comedians and Laurel and Hardy and
I love watching Marx Buster Brothers. Keaton for me was
Buster Keaton
was number one, and Stan Laurel of Laurel and Hardy. I mean, of course, Laurel and Hardy, you can't think of them separately, but I think of Stan Laurel as one of the greats because he wrote most of those sketches.
Oh, did he really?
Movies, yeah.
Because he was a contemporary of Chaplin's. They were in sort of the same comic troupe.
And mm-hmm. it's been said that Chaplin considered Stan Laurel his greatest opposition for or competition for greatest comic.
Ever. Oh, really?
Partly because Charlie Chaplin, he came up with his autobiography, My Life.
Yeah.
And even though he'd worked with Stan Laurel for years, never mentions him.
Really?
And it's been said, well, it's because he didn't want to. He thought that was his competition.
No, because I have the autobiography, but I have a lot of books on Chaplin. My autobiography, but I also have a lot of books on Chaplin, and there is that photo of Chaplin seated in the front, and I want to say Carnot's is the name.
Oh, yeah,
Carnot's
yeah, yeah.
comic mm-hmm. troop or something.
Right.
And there's a very young Stan Laurel in the background. So I'm sorry, Maya, I didn't mean to go back in time. You're trying to make it more contemporary, and I'm bringing us back
not
to the,
no,
to
I
the
appreciate
turn
all
of the century.
There's a little bit before my time, all those people, but I appreciate...
but not significantly. Not significant,
but a little bit. But I love that. I'm thinking. You said you used to do part of somebody's act.
Oh, Steve Martin. I would say. Yeah.
When I was an actor, very young, I would have to do a monologue. I would do part of Shelley Berman's act.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If I was going in for something that was comedic.
Oh, yeah.
And he was to me, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
And he still is. Actually.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
He's still amazing.
Right. Yeah, I love.
Do you remember the gist of the act?
It was it was the portion that I did was a woman that was jumping out of a window and being persuaded not to do that. And
oh, okay.
He was persuading her. So I learned it verbatim.
It was like a one-sided thing, like a Bob Newhart thing,
exactly.
Like a one-sided.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And I must say that I had it down so, pat that I always no one ever knew. The people, the casting people I was auditioning for, the producers never knew that it was his act, which I thought, gosh, that's pretty cool. I must really be, pulling
right,
it
right.
off.
I have his albums too, and I would listen to them.
Yeah,
I did that with Dangerfield when I auditioned for Tony and Tina's in Chicago, because I had to do Tony and Tina's wedding, and when I was doing it, it was right around the time that Dangerfield was just sort of coming back. Mm. He just sort of really, I think Back to School had just come out, and that's what I did, because I did this like schlocky kind of. He was a caterer. He was Vinnie Black, the Cadillac of caterers, but he wanted to be a stand-up comedian. So that was the bit, and I stole all of Dangerfield stuff, and I just did the same, these jokes. And I tell you, my wife's the worst cook in the world. In my house, we beg for Alka-Seltzer. the flies chipped in to get the screen fixed. I don't think meatloaf should glow in the dark. My wife says, take out the trash. I say, you cooked it, you take it out. So I didn't really do the have his music quite so down. I made that a little more Guido, but.
I used to watch the Rodney Dangerfield and Steve Martin.
Yeah.
After I was done in New York, I spent the better part of a year there. I came out to Los Angeles and started working at clubs that you never heard of before. They don't even exist anymore. One was called Osco's Comedy Cave. Where the Beverly,
Osco's or Oscars?
Osco's. It was an Iranian discotheque. It was below an Iranian discotheque. It was where the Beverly Center is. Where the Beverly Center is now.
Oh, it actually was
an Iranian discotheque. And we have to be very physical, because often they wouldn't understand.
I knew there was some bad energy at the Beverly Center.
They wouldn't understand English, so we'd have to be very animated. So I started there, but then I lived, within a year, I was living in a house with 7 comedians.
Oh, my God. What's
that
like?
Up in the hills above the country. It was like, if there had been reality shows back then, we would have been right in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was like Andrew Dice Clay was one of my housemates, and Yakov Smirnov, the Russian comic. We all lived together. Clay was a great guy. I knew him as Andy Silverstein.
Yeah.
From New York. And he'd have a different girlfriend every couple months. And he'd go, hey, fish cakes, what'd you think of the doll? And I said, well, she seemed very nice. And he'd go, nice, she's a dish. So he was very much like his persona, as you saw, although not at all misogynistic in real life.
He kind of tanked on Celebrity Apprentice, though, didn't he? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't that thrilled with that.
He was like that, but he hadn't really owned that character yet.
He had not yet, yeah.
Okay.
He had not yet.
Okay.
But at that time, the Comedy Store was the mecca of stand-up comedy.
Absolutely.
And it was in its heyday. And I would go on early, At the Sunset Comedy Store, and there used to be a comedy store in Westwood as well. So I would do those, and then I would just sit back and watch the comedians at the Sunset Store. Rodney Dangerfield, followed by Robin Williams, followed by Steve Martin, followed by Richard
Pryor.
Can
you imagine?
It was incredible. And then there was the Comedy Store Players with Martin Short and Robin Williams in the main room, the big room. Afterwards, Andy Kaufman would get up and goad women to come up and wrestle him. So it was the whole place was a circus. Yeah. And it was
and
wonderful.
What a time to be there, too. What a time to be there. Oh, yeah,
it's really a wonderful, wonderful time.
Paul, we have an arts calendar that we need to address. We probably should do that and then get back to talking to Dan.
Oh, yes, definitely,
it's so
definitely. Well, we do have to chime in and pay the bills. Excuse us one second, Dan, while we do that. Michael, do you want to kick this off?
Sure, I will be happy to. We'll just kind of switch out here.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. No, don't miss the dark and campy world of Little Shop of Horrors. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and jump out of your seat from the creepy chills and comic spills with its famous cast of characters, including Seymour, Audrey, and Audrey 2, a mysterious unidentified plant which seems to have a sinister craving for humans and soon begins to sing for its supper. To what extremes will Seymour go to feed his strange visitor from another planet? Find out beginning this Friday, November 12th through November 21st at Performance Riverside in the Landis Performing Arts Center.
Friday, November 12th and Saturday, November 13th at Copley Symphony Hall in San Diego, California. The San Diego Symphony's principal pops conductor and Oscar, Grammy, Emmy, Tony, Golden Globe, and Pulitzer Prize winner Marvin Hamlisch.
Take a breath.
Performs all of his award-worthy hits, including music from A Chorus Line, plus film score selections from The Swimmer, Three Men and a Baby, Ice Castles, Take the Money and Run, and his recent acclaimed score for The Informant.
And one thing, in light of the fact that Ms. Moreno, obviously there was a conflict that could not be avoided today, I do want to say that, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Los Angeles area, make it a point of seeing her in concert at the Catalina Bar and Grill Jazz Club in Hollywood this coming Saturday evening, November 13th. It is a rare concert appearance. For reservations, call 323-466-2210 or visit the Catalina Jazz Club's website at catalinajazzclub.com.
Now, I want to go back to Dan. Dan, I do want you to pick up where we left off, because I'm very interested in hearing this trajectory. But before we go back to that, I want to make sure we don't shortchange you in terms of your book, which I think is just wonderful.
Absolutely.
If you would mind just taking the time to sort of describe the book. I know it goes back to the magic days, and the title and where it's available, and a little synopsis, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. My debut novel is called Jackson and Jenks Master Magicians. If you go to www.kidmagicians.com, you'll see, you'll read all about it, or my personal website, danfrischman.com. You can see it there too.
It's Frischer. I'm sorry. Yeah, but go
Don't
ahead.
Make that mistake.
Yeah,
again.
Go ahead. Right. Yeah. So sorry.
So either kidmagicians.com or Dan Frischman, FrischMan.com.
Right. Mrs. Banks, if you're listening, buy the book.
Right. And it's for, I'd say, the 9 to 12 year old. Range, but families have been enjoying reading it, and it's from my magic days. However, it's come more of a fantasy about two amateur magicians whose tricks always fail.
Okay.
But a supernatural occurrence turns one of them into a real magician who can do anything, and it becomes a careful what you wish for kind of a story when they turn the president into a guinea pig, and then they can't turn him back.
Okay.
So it's kind of a fun.
Did you just
action.
Give away the book there?
Well, you'll have to find out what happens at the end.
Yeah. You know what I love on your website? The video that you do about the book.
Oh, thanks.
It's awesome. It really is awesome. I was riveted. I love kids' stories like this.
Thanks. You mentioned Little Shop as well. If you go to my personal website, danfrischman.com, I have a video bio on there. And there's a clip of me doing the Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes,
and
you as Seymour.
Right, Seymour, right.
Yes,
yeah,
perfectly
right.
Cast.
Yeah.
That's great.
Perfectly. You could still do it.
Absolutely.
You know, you're
Lift
still the writer.
Lift up your head, wipe off that mascara. Here, take my Kleenex, wipe that lipstick. Okay, thank you.
Show me your face. Oh, no, I got to do the. I would do the dentist, probably.
Oh,
that
you
would be
oh,
more
you'd
of my.
Be perfect.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
I was younger, just a bad little kid. So Jackson and Jenks, Master Magicians, on Amazon.
right? Yes.
And also available through the website. And you, if I remember correctly, you had a book signing of that. Was that recently?
Oh, actually, I did a book signing last week at Barnes & Noble, Manhattan Beach.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I have been going around visiting a lot of the Barnes & Noble stores, and I do a little magic and book signings. And
did you bring any magic today? You know, I was going to call you and ask you to do that.
Yes, watch. Here's a rabbit.
Oh my God. Wow. That's astounding.
Holy mackerel.
Can you believe? Oh, my God. And look at all the turtles. And oh, my God. He's got a unicorn in there.
Gone. There you go. Oh, disappear.
All right.
We'll not see how it's done.
Okay. Now, we're talking magic, and I do want to... I have to chime in with my magic story. Now.
Oh,
I got to
chime
in with my magic story. Because you were talking about the influence, the you mentioned someone in Cub Scouts, and that was where my nightmare magic story happened. Because I also did magic shows for kids' parties when I was young. I wasn't as accomplished as you, but I was lucky because I had an uncle named Art Mormile, and he wasn't really. He wasn't really my uncle, but he was one of those, you know, the way we are with our families. He's just a adult you respect. You call him your uncle, so he was my uncle Art, and. He was a magician, and he had an incredible collection of magic books. So he gave me all of his old equipment. And I ended up getting doves and ropes and silks and cards and flowers and all these different things. And then I did my biggest gig ever was a blue and gold dinner. Do you remember and gold dinners for Cub Scouts? It was I don't know, it was a father-son or a family thing, but it was a Cub Scout event. So I'm doing this, and the Scoutmaster, who I haven't met in person... I've only talked to him on the phone, who booked me for it, Scoutmaster Knapp or something. He says, all right, well, you know, I'll be there. So, you know, as you know, when you do a magic show for kids, if you're looking for an assistant, you either pick the troublesome one to sort of engage them, or you pick an adult that they respect, and then if you treat them well, then you'll have the kids on your side. So I figure the first thing I'll do, I had my little finger guillotine chopper, the little finger chopper thing. You put your finger in, you chop your finger off, and I go, okay, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to bring Scoutmaster Knapp up here. Scoutmaster Knapp, come on up. He comes up. He's missing three fingers off. Right. And I'm just like, and of course, being the consummate pro that I was, I'm just like, you know, just totally startled. And he was the coolest guy ever because he knew that I didn't know. The audience thought I was making fun of him, but he knew that we had never met. So he comes up on stage. I got my little finger guillotine chopper. He puts his hand up. He goes, "We're not going to do this trick again, are we?"
Oh my!
I was like,
great line.
But and totally won him right back. But that was truly. I mean, when you're 14 years old.
Oh my.
And you just don't know how to handle that.
Well, so. I had set a birthday girl on fire once.
Your worst moment?
This is my worst moment.
Okay.
I was in someone's house doing a birthday party show.
Oh, good. It was a show. I just thought you just set him on fire.
just to upset. I was a little bratty kid.
It really didn't
matter. But the parents are in another room. And the finale of the show is actually what's called, magicians know as the super ex levitation, where there's a woman, or the birthday girl in this case, lies on a board, and I pull out two supports underneath the board, and voila, she's floating in the air. And I had a cloth that I pull up to show that she's floating. And there's a flash pot to make it more dramatic, to make a little puff of smoke. Well, the flash pot uses a little flame and some flash paper. It caught fire to the cloth. So I pulled the cloth up over her to reveal she's floating in the air, and there's a little flame, and it's getting close. It's right on top on her. Oh. It's getting close to her dress, and the kids are going, "She's on fire! She's on fire!" And I looked, and indeed, there's this flame starting to get larger. And I had one of those Zen moments where I didn't even think about it. I just put my hand right over the fire and squashed it. Just put it out.
Right.
And I don't even remember it. It was just like wham. And I'm trying to make it part of the show. The amazing, the flame will help the illusion of levitation. You know, and I'm batting with the newspapers. You know, the ashes are flying around. Fortunately, you know, the birthday girl just has her eyes closed, so she didn't see what was going on. Afterwards, the kids go to their parents, and they said, you know, Mommy, the magician set Cindy on fire. And the parents were going, oh, and was it scary? Oh. They didn't realize it was on fire.
Right.
So that was
At which point, one of the women at the party said, "I'm tipsy."
Exactly.
Wee.
Wee.
You know, I know
my
how,
child is on fire.
I know how you do many of those things because, you know, I represented in my career, which is public relations and production, but in the PR side of my life, David Copperfield.
Oh, boy.
And Lance Burton.
Wow.
Yeah, for years.
Wow,
so you know you have to sign, you have to sign documents, you know, when you're associated with those people, not to reveal anything that you may become aware of,
and not to set them on fire,
and not to set them on fire.
Yeah. Did you ever have, because I know that everyone always wants to know the trick. Did you work that? Did you ever work that into things? Because I always see a lot of magicians now. It's sort of the false reveal.
Oh, that was always, yeah. It was okay. There was a trick called one of the first tricks I ever got was called the sucker die box, where the kids think they know where the dice is hiding, and then of course at the end you fool them and they don't know at all. But that's one of the mainstays of kids.
Right.
Magic is, I gotcha.
Yeah, right.
Which they love. You know.
And you're also a member, you're a lifetime member of the Magic Castle, right?
Oh, yeah. I love going up there. In fact, if I've done tricks for years, but some of these guys are so great. It's wonderful just to see, it's like a singer. You've heard these songs before, the old standards, but to see how someone else does a song. So
right.
You watch how these guys, you know, do their trick or their new story, they tell that goes along with it. It's great to see, and if I can be fooled, I'm like in heaven.
Oh, and I've had a ball. We went in because you know you have to be a member or be guest of a member to go in, and Dan was nice enough to let us go in, my wife and a couple of our friends, and we just had a ball. I mean, just go. And once again, I know enough about it to not be a complete rube about it, but once again, you fool me, I respect it even more because I know, you know, I know about the basic principles of misdirection and things like that, but there are some really phenomenal, a sleight of hand especially up there was just really staggering. The sleight of hand guy that we saw, who sadly his name escapes me now, but he was very, very good. And you've seen a number of performers up there. They use that downstairs room,
downstairs,
that inner circle.
Inner Sanctum.
Inner Sanctum.
Which is now a cabaret club.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love the close-up tricks that you're right in the, you're right up close.
Right.
I mean, the illusions, there's always some box or whatever. There's only a few different ways to do those illusions.
Right.
But to be up close and watch a guy with, you know, who really knows his stuff, to me, is the most impressive.
So, but you think the grand things like Siegfried and Roy, I mean, those guys, I mean, really,
they're
unbelievable when they were performing. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. I mean, that stuff just blew me away. You know, I just want to acknowledge a couple things before we leave the air, if I may. And that is, earlier with reference to our live arts calendar, we suggest that if you want more information about those two particular shows that we listed, please visit our website, the show's website at stateofthearts.la.com, or you can certainly go to performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
And also, Michael, I would like you to chime in, as I will chime in before we wrap it up, with a sort of a encapsulated review about Barbara Van Orden's performance at Sterling's Upstairs.
Absolutely.
Yesterday.
I have a nightclub down in Studio City called Sterling's Upstairs. Paul was a guest last night of the beautiful Barbara Van Orden, who headlined the club, and we had her on the show last week, and she was very, very generous and had us there, and we had a wonderful time. For me, Paul, it was seeing an act of those great ladies that we've talked about on the radio show here that, you know, have you know, appear on Broadway, and they're class women, you know. I mean,
the dames.
Carol Lawrence.
The grand
dames.
Yeah.
Lawrence Henderson, those ladies. And Barbara Van Orden is one of those ladies. She is beautiful. She is glamorous. And she had a singing career many years ago. In the Catskills is where she first started, and then she segued into meeting all these famous comedians like Maury Amsterdam and
Soupy Sales
and Red Buttons, and she opened for them, and eventually this led her into other areas of the business, also to Las Vegas, where the man himself, Mr. Frank Sinatra, saw her working with Shecky Green and asked her to open for him, Frank Sinatra, at the Persian Room at the Plaza in New York. So that was what we were looking at last night.
Yeah, it was. It was like seeing a little bit of, I mean, and still, you know, still a vibrant performer and still, you know, had the room and kept the room. But it was also sort of like it was just so nice to see such such elegance, you know, like you said, the old school elegance where just like, you know, she was just, you know, she really presented sort of a, the supper club type of vibe, like just
exactly.
that world that you're trying to create there. Dan, if you've never been there, the yeah. Sterling's upstairs, it's like going, I want to say going back in time, but it's not like going back in time because I feel like it's archaic or outdated or anything like that. It's going back to a time where you wear it's very similar to the Magic Castle in that you wear a jacket, mm-hmm. you dress nice,
yeah.
there's a respect for just the event.
Right.
And I think that's what she did. She really, mm-hmm. you know, she respected
that.
It and she honored
nice.
It. Yeah,
very
it
was, nice.
Was great.
So I think maybe we should talk. You and I, we'll get together. We'll talk about an act. You sing.
Sure. Yeah.
You do magic.
Uh-huh.
Why not headline Sterling's upstairs?
And I'm going to come, and he's going to set me on fire.
There you go. That's there you go.
I would love to do that. That would be very exciting.
Seriously, I'm being serious now.
Okay. Absolutely. Well,
now, and you know, I'll do the postcards, and I'll make sure that I spell Dan Frischer right.
Right. but we've got Mrs. Banks' numbers, so we'll
call her back.
Yeah.
Before we sign off, and we have like about 30 seconds left, but as a reminder, Dan, the website for Danfrischman.com.
Right, danfrischman.com.
And for the
book alone is kidmagicians.com. The book's about two kid magicians, so that's why I put kidmagicians.com.
Makes sense.
Don't
me,
lose yeah. us in the jargon now, Dan. You're really throwing us. Michael, who do we have coming up next week?
We have the beautiful and talented Miss Leslie Uggams.
Leslie Uggams?
Yes.
You
yes,
can tell
she's
how,
getting ready
how
to
I have
open.
My finger on the pulse beat of
getting
this.
Getting ready to open at the Pasadena Playhouse
okay.
In a new show.
Beautiful. And yep. maybe, who knows, maybe we'll have Rita Moreno
That's
next
very
week.
Possible.
All right. This is State of the Arts on LA Talk Radio. We're delighted, Dan. Thank you so much. I'm going to actually
guys.
Give you a little more applause as we go out for that. And I love
Could
the way it
Could you slide
ends.
It down?
I just
maybe
love
fade it out, Paul? A little theatrical.
We will see you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.